For Java, is that you write your program into a file that has an extension called .java. Then the main part of the program is written into a main function, which is actually called a method. That's a typo on this slide. It should be the main method. That's the first time I noticed that, which is going to be executed first. So that's similar to C, that there's a main part of the program which will be executed first. So if you want to compile and run this program, which is in a .java file, you run the compiler. It's called Java C. So you say Java C. Let me use the mouse here for the pointer. Then you give the name of your program .java. It goes away and compiles. It produces a file of the form. If you originally called it myprogram.java, it'll produce a file called myprogram.class. And again, there are some typos here that should be a capital M and a capital P as well. It preserves the name of your program down here on myprogram.class. So that's the compiled version. That's the bytecode produced by the compiler. But then if you're just running this as a standalone program, you then run the interpreter, which is called Java. You say Java and the name of the program, and that executes the bytecodes in the java.class. So it's quite possible to write Java applications which are not dependent on a web server or a browser situation. So this is a C-based language, so our first program is going to be in traditional style called Hello World. Now, since Java is object-oriented, all programs are written as a class. So every program that you write will have this structure where you have the keyword class and you have the name of the program. And then within these curly brackets, you have the body of the program. Now, this is a very simple program. It's just going to have a main function, which when it executes is going to print out on the standard output a message that says, Hello World. So here is the declaration for the main program. It doesn't take any arguments. The body is in curly braces. The function to print is called println. And the println function, I'm calling it that in Java, it would actually be called a method, is part of a class called out. And that class is part of a package called system. So when you want to address the println function, you say system.out.println, and that gives its address within a hierarchy of Java classes that are available to be used. So there's always this hierarchical structure that you can build up of collections of classes into packages, and you use this dot notation to address variables and methods which are in classes within this system. Notice that the syntax is very similar to C with the curly braces, the semicolons after every statement. But one main difference is that upper and lowercase matter. So you have to be very careful about that. And in fact, there is a traditional scheme of writing the names of classes and some of the methods by having uppercase on the first letters of some of the parts of the words. And so there is always this upper and lowercase to worry about in Java. Are there any questions about that program? I think it gives you a little bit of the flavor of some of the syntax. So that's just an extremely simple version of a Java application. Now let's look at an equally simple version of a Java applet. So Java applets are classes which are not intended to run as a standalone program, but are intended to be downloaded to the browser and to be run as part of the browser window system. So the browser's already put up a window on somebody's workstation. And essentially, it's going to call this applet like in some other language you would call a subroutine to display part of the browser window. So applets have a little bit different structure. They don't have a main program to be the first thing that's executed, but they have a set of functions or methods which the browser knows it can call to draw something or display something on the browser window. These set of functions have things like init and start for setting up variables, and in particular they have a function or a method called paint, which is one which actually draws things on the browser window. So like we discussed before, the way that you would make an applet is you would write the Java code, run it through the compiler to create the bytecodes. You would get something, if your applet was called myapplet.java, the compiler, which is called Java C, would produce something of the form myapplet.class. Then you would create an HTML file, suppose you called it myapplet.html, and you would have an applet tag which referred to the bytecodes called myapplet.class. Here are some more details about the... Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to move over this on the window on this other side. You can't see that. Okay. So this is an example similar to what we saw before. Width and height are filled in here. That's the number of pixels that's going to be the area in the browser window that's going to be displayed in by the applet. The codebase attribute is optional. It specifies the directory in which the applet is found, and then the code gives the actual name of the applet, so it should be something.class. If the codebase is not there, then the browser assumes that the applet is found in the same directory as the HTML file. There are other attributes that you can put. There's this alt, something to print in case your browser doesn't recognize the applet tag, name in case you want to give a name to the window area that the applet is controlling. And that way, different applets, or in fact applets in other frames, if you're using frames in Netscape, can refer to each other as places to display things in the same browser window. Align in vSpace and hSpace specify how to line things up with respect to the HTML. Now, another thing that you can do is pass parameters to the applet code. And if you want to do that, after the applet tag, in which you specify all those things, including the name of the code file that you want to have, you can have any number of tags called param for parameter, and it gives a name that you're going to refer to each parameter by, and what the value is as some string. Then in the Java applet, you have a function, a method called getParameter that you can use to look up the values of these different parameters that are passed through. So here's an example of a simple Java applet. And in this particular applet, we do a different way of using the dot notation to refer to names in the program. And that is, if we have lots of names that have the same beginning notation, like here's a package called Java, a package called AWT, and a class called Graphics, if we're going to refer to lots of methods and variables in that class, then we don't want to always be writing java.awt.graphics.drawstring.drawrect. There's a lot of them. So we can say import that entire class, and then we can just refer to names like drawstring without putting a lot of dot notation on that. So again, this is Java, so that we write a class. We're making this a public class in Java. As in other object-oriented languages, if you make something public, it means that people from the outside of this can call it, and that's what we want to do, because we want the browser to be able to call this applet. Now, an applet is not a standalone program. It actually extends another class, which defines sort of basic behavior of applets in the browser window, called java.applet.applet. And we'll say more of that. This is the subclass mechanism to say extends here. We'll talk more about that when we get to the object-oriented part. Now, the actual main part of this program is a method called paint that's going to paint on the browser window. And in order to paint, this is the declaration of the method. It has an argument which is the context, the graphics context of the browser window that's already been set up. And this context is a member of the class called graphics, so we can use all these methods like drawstring, drawCircle, there's a lot of them, to draw things on the browser window. In this case, we're doing drawstring of a string called Hello World. And in the graphics package, you have to specify where things are going to go by pixel location. So this is at pixel location 525. Now, a lot of the windowing stuff doesn't get down. You don't have to say where things go by pixels, but these particular drawing methods do. So here's an example of a HTML file that will display this applet. I guess I forgot to look on those surveys that you handed in and see how many people. Are there anybody who doesn't know a little bit of HTML? Anybody who has never prepared a web page? Okay. So we made to. Actually, what we're going to do is just give you some example web pages so that you can, of a student web page, and you can change it and go from there. We're not going to be doing extensive building of web pages. So this is a simple HTML page. In the body, we have some text. This is just normal text that's interpreted by the browser as a label for the applet. Then there's this applet tag, and it's called Hello World Applet.class and gives an area in which the applet is supposed to execute. So anybody who loads this HTML page into their browser, the applet will also be downloaded from the web server and will run and will display the text Hello World, which is not too exciting because you could have printed Hello World in your HTML. But you can also get your applet, of course, to do lots of other interesting things. Now we're going to go very fast over sort of the basics of the Java language. And we pointed out that it has a lot of similarity to C, that is, you write statements and they have semicolons at the end. You use curly braces to put around blocks for like a begin and end. There are a few differences, though, and you declare variables similar to the ways you do in C and so on. One is that characters, instead of being 8-bit ASCII, are 16-bit Unicode because it has a much bigger character set to take account of possible multiple languages and so on. There are more kinds of comments. There's the //, which is everything onto the rest of the line is a comment. There's the usual /*, which begins a comment, and */ ends it. And then there's /*/, which ends with a */, which is a special comment for the Java doc package, which if you put some other kinds of documentation in, will automatically generate those Java formatted APIs and other kinds of documentation for your code. As far as program structure goes, you can put one or more classes in a file. It's called a compilation unit. When you compile that file, it will compile the main class. It will compile any classes which that class is going to use, including the ones in that file or in any other files in the same directory that class is going to call. So in general, you don't have to, if you have a bunch of different classes in an application, you don't have to invoke the compiler multiple times. You just invoke the compiler on the main class, and it goes off and automatically compile everything else if it's necessary. And similarly for the applet, the browser, if there's subsidiary classes used by a main applet, you don't have to specify them all. The browser will automatically download all the classes that it needs. So let's give a few details about variables and expressions and types. There are primitive or simple types, which are types that are built in. There are composite types, which are objects. It's part of the object-oriented part of the language that you can always make a class which is going to create types that you define. Arrays are sort of in between primitive types and objects. We'll discuss those. So the primitive types are, there are four integer types. They're listed there, byte, short, int, long. For floating point, there's float and double. And then there's characters, which, as we mentioned, are 16-bit. If you want to convert things from one type to another, you can do cast. Note that Booleans, there are real Booleans, and they have values called true and false, and you don't represent Booleans by 0 and 1 and minus 1 like you do in some languages, like C. So let's mention what arrays look like. You declare arrays by giving the type of the elements of the array. In this case, suppose we want to create a one-dimensional array of integers. Let's call the name of the array vec. Then the type of the elements here is given as int. And the fact that we put one pair of square brackets indicates that this is a one-dimensional array. So you can put that in the order given here, int vec square brackets, or you can say int square brackets vec. Either of those is fine. Now that just declares the variable vec to have that type, a one-dimensional array whose elements are ints. If you actually want to create that array so that there is storage allocated for it, then you use the keyword called new. You say vec is a new int, and at that point you must specify what the size of the array is going to be. And in this example, 128. Of course, you can combine the declaration and the creation of the array if you wish. So this example showed creating an array of a primitive type, which is int. You can also create arrays of arbitrary composite types or objects. One of the types of objects in Java are threads. So for example, you could create an array of threads by just giving the construct new and then giving the name of the class that you wanted to create as the elements of the array. This is a little bit different from having an array of integers, because when you create the array of integers, since it's a primitive type, each element is an int is already created. When you create a composite type, when you say, create me a vector of threads, it only creates essentially a list of placeholders for the threads. Then for each individual one, you actually have to run the thread constructor, which is going to allocate all the space for that particular thread to have. But we'll be giving examples of that. When you declared a one-dimensional array of length 128, it's subscripted by integers from 0 to 127. These subscripts are range checked at runtime so that you can't say things like vec of minus 1. Because the indexing starts at 0. There is a method that you can use on arrays. That's why arrays are partially like classes instead of primitive types. You can say vec.length, I'm sorry, not a method, a variable, which tells you, gives you the length of that array. You can declare arrays, give their size by a variable, which is defined at runtime, the so-called dynamic sizing. Arrays don't change their size during runtime. It's just that the size can be not known until runtime. But once you've declared an array, of some size, then it stays that size. There is another data type that can vary in size over the lifetime of the program. So far, the examples we've shown have all been one-dimensional arrays. You get multi-dimensional arrays just by putting more square brackets, and these are actually, it's actually considered to be a one-dimensional array in which each element is itself an array, and you can create so-called ragged arrays in which each of those, in what you would think of as the second dimension, was a different size, for example. Here are some examples of expressions, and I think they should look pretty familiar. There's plus and times. You put parentheses around things to indicate precedence. There's the construct like I plus plus, which is equivalent to I is assigned I plus 1. There are Boolean things. There are shift things. This question mark might be unfamiliar to some of you. It's a conditional expression. What's on the left of the question mark is the Boolean condition. If it's true, then you execute the true part, and then there's a colon, and then there's the false part that's executed if the expression is false. Okay, so it's similar to the SNL statement, except that instead of statements here, you have expressions. String concatenation is given with plus. It's equivalent to the dot in Perl, and for those of you who know Perl, for concatenating together two strings. If you have a variable and you want to know if it's an instance of a particular class, you have this construct instance of, which is true in exactly that case. My next button doesn't seem to be working. There we go. So here's the first slide on control flow, and it lists a number of statements that you have in Java. There is a conditional statement, if then else, just like in C. You say if, in parentheses you put a Boolean expression. Either you put one statement, or in curly braces you put a part that's the then part. Then you give the keyword else. Then you put what's to be executed in the case the expression is false. In this case, it's another if. There's a while loop, while Boolean expression do some statement or block. There's a for loop, and it's just like in C, so I guess in C++, so I guess I won't go over it. Expression 1 initializes the loop variable. Expression 2, I guess I will go over it, is applied. It's the increment. It's applied at the end of every iteration of the loop. And the loop continues as long as this Boolean expression remains true. There's also a switch statement, which I won't go over. Next in your notes are several slides about continue and break. And let me just briefly mention, these first two show with a for loop that if you say continue, you can jump out of the current iteration of the loop to the next iteration of the loop. If you say break, you can jump out of the current iteration of the loop entirely out of the loop so that you don't execute the loop anymore. And there is a similar thing on the next slide for the switch statement to break out of the first iteration and then to break out of the whole loop. Now, I want to show you some more examples that illustrate the syntax of the language, and it's kind of hard to do that with anything significant because I haven't told you about all the classes that do really fun things like windowing and so on. But let's start with some examples that do some more of the simple graphics, like the drawstring example. So one thing to know is in these examples we're going to be drawing, this is the one case where you draw, you say where, according to some pixel coordinates, things should go in the browser window. As I said before, it's not true of most of the constructs. And in that case, pixels are numbered from the upper left of the part of the browser window that is controlled by the applet. Furthermore, there is a current state associated with this part of the browser window. In particular, there's a current font and a current color. So here's an example where we're going to do the Hello World example, only we're going to say hello again in a different font in a different color. And the thing about fonts and colors is, like almost everything in Java except for the primitive types, they're classes. So if you want to declare a font, here's the same structure for having an applet. And within this applet, we have a variable declared, f, which is of type font. At the same time as we do the declaration, we do the initialization, we say new, and in order to create something of type font, you give a method that's called a constructor, which has the same name. Okay? So whenever you write a class that's going to be creating structures of some sort, you will write a method of the same name, which is called the constructor that's going to do that. The constructor for fonts take a bunch of parameters in which you can pick one of a list of fonts, what style it is and what size it is, to set it up. So now we have F set up as the font, which is Times Roman, bold, 36. So in fact, if we were doing a complex user interface, we would probably set up sort of several standard fonts to be used at different places in our user interface. Now my paint program can change the font by, there's a method called setFont. I change it to F. I also have a method called setColor, which will change the current color. And in this case, I didn't have to create a new color because there are a bunch of standard colors built in as variables in the class called color. So there's color.red, color.black, color.white. You can just use those without having to create new ones. So in this case, we did red. And then when we draw the string, it comes out in a big font, and it comes out red. I could show you that, but I'm running out of time. Let's go on to some of the other things. So here's an example that's drawing some shapes. So there are a bunch of methods in the graphics class. There is drawRect, which draws a rectangle that is just the border of the rectangle. There's fillRect, which draws a rectangle but fills in the interior. So in this example, well, first of all, I actually declared a new color, and I created it by using a color constructor which accepts RGB values in the range of 0 to 255 to tell me what are the mix of colors this should be. So you can design any color that you want using RGB values. So I set the color to be green. I make a filled rectangle, which is green. The result of this applet is shown down at the bottom. Then I set the color to be black, and I draw the same rectangle, only without being filled, and that puts this one pixel border around this. So one of the things that you notice is that when you, in the drawing part of this program, in the graphics package, as you keep drawing things, it just puts them up on top of each other. So you just keep building up things that you've drawn. They just go right on top. And then I finally did a circle by doing this filled oval of this color that I created is actually magenta. Here's an example of an applet that passes parameters. In this one, there's a parameter which has a name. I gave it a value of my own, Nancy. And I wanted to show you this applet. In this applet, I have two methods. There's another standard method which I can have called init, in which I can do any initial kind of, well, any initializations to variables and things that I want to do. And so in this case, I have a variable declared in my applet called name, which is a string, and I can get that string by calling the method getParameter to be the value of the parameter that was passed on the HTML page. So this should be the name, the string Nancy, if it's run with that HTML page that we just saw in the previous one. This actually tests, and if they didn't put a parameter, it inserts the name Laura. Then it constructs a string that says either hello Nancy or hello Laura, and then the paint method draws that. There's another applet here which does something a little trickier, which uses methods which get you the width and height of the browser window in order to calculate how to center a string in the window, and I'll leave that for you to check out in any kind of detail. Here's a list of the functions that you can define when you're the standard methods for applets. There's init, which is executed once when the applet is downloaded. There's start, which is executed each time the browser window is re-entered. Because you have to be prepared for the fact that if people like close the browser window, then you want the applet to be stopped, and when the browser window is opened again, then the applet is restarted. So there's this difference between the time when the applet is downloaded, which is once, and the time that the applet is started, which might be more than once, depending on what people are doing with the browser window. Or they might be moving over other frames on top of the browser window and so on. And it needs to refresh, it needs to restart the applet to refresh the window. Paint, of course, is executed every time you want to draw. And then stop and destroy have similar meaning to start and init. There are two other methods, repaint and update, which are used as you change the contents of the browser window. And again, we'll be going over those in more detail later. And then I have two more examples here of applets. This one draws a set of boxes, and I wanted to show this example to illustrate the use of some methods from the math package. So in fact, in this particular example, there are two for loops to create a grid of boxes, and in each iteration of the loop, there are three calls to math.random to get a random number. These random numbers come between 0 and 1, so they are resized to be between 0 and 255 by multiplying here. Then they're converted to integers by taking math.floor. This example actually then casts them to be int, and I believe that's unnecessary because math.floor will produce an integer. But this is just to make sure. So these three values are then taken to be their integers. They're called rval, gval, and bval. And they're given as the arguments to create a new color. So this is just a color created out of three random numbers. And then it's used to draw colored rectangles. I can show you this applet running, and it creates lots of brown, as you might suppose, when you mix colors together like that. I gave one more version that does, this is the applet, appears the same, but I did it in a different, actually more inefficient way, just to illustrate the use of arrays. So in this applet, there are three arrays created that are two-dimensional, and these three arrays will have the three color numbers for each of those boxes. So first, there's a loop which uses random and to create three color numbers, and here is the assignment to individual elements of the array. So if we have an array called color underbar r, we can just index it with I and j, that gives a particular element, and we can assign it some integer. So that shows assignment to elements of arrays. And then, of course, down here, there's another loop which goes through and accesses the elements of the array and uses it to create a number and draw the rectangle. So that illustrates the use of arrays. I wanted to start the Java object model tonight, but I think I'm going to have to stop here. I believe class is over at 8:25. It's supposed to be over at 8:20, but you're supposed to have an extra 5 minutes every night because of Martin Luther King Day, right? So 8:25. We have to get in our contact minutes. I shouldn't say these things. I'm still recording. So I showed you your homework assignment. I gave you the web address of the class page, and the homework assignment will be linked in tomorrow. Mehmet and I will get together and fix that. The Java examples that I showed in the lecture will also be linked in so that you can see them. If anyone is interested, they're under the same web address, except it's ecs400spring96/java in all caps. Instead of this, you... Almost all the Java examples are linked into your class page, except for these particular ones, and we'll get those fixed up. I have one more announcement, or actually I have two more announcements. The first is that originally there was a class called CPS 714, which was supposed to do more advanced web projects, and it was canceled. It's now been reopened. So I don't know, this class is supposed to be the prerequisite for that class, so probably none of you are going to be taking it, but you might be eligible, or you might know of someone who was interested in that, and so I want to tell you that that class has been reopened. It will be done essentially as an independent study. You meet once a week in Jeffrey Fox's office and plan out your projects. The other announcement is that if anyone tried to register for this course and was closed out, it has also been reopened, so please do go and get registered so that we have an accurate count of what we need. Now, is there anyone who didn't see the class list that was passed around?